Yeah, as I was saying today, I'll talk about towards preparation of scattering wave packets of hadrons on a quantum computer. It's a NISQ algorithm for lattice gauge theories. This is the work done with my former advisor, Zohra Dawoodi, here in the audience, and her current PhD student, Chongqing Xie, at the University of Maryland. So why should we care about gauge theories? Well, first of all, standard model is a gauge theory. It's a SU3 color cross SU2 left times U1 hypercharge. And the forces in the standard model are described by gauge symmetries. Particularly, this weak and strong force are described by this non-abelian gauge theories SU3 and SU2. And among them, this SU3 color is a theory that describes the strong force, or the theory what we call quantum chromodynamics. And this one is very interesting because it becomes strongly interacting at low energies. This is also a theory which describes the nuclear force. It's a theory that describes quark interactions mediated by gluons. And because of these strong interactions and asymptotic freedom and phenomena like confinement, it requires non-perturbative methods for calculating observables at low energies. So this makes it tricky. And the current way of non-perturbatively solving QCD is this method called lattice QCD. So lattice QCD is when the QCD Lagrangian is put on a discrete space-time grid, and time is and a weak rotation is performed. So now we have a Euclidean time instead of a Minkowski time, and the observables are calculated using the path integral formalism as shown here. So this is the observable, and this is the factor which comes after after performing a weak rotation, and this path integral factor gets a interpretation of a probability distribution, as you can see here, and then one can perform Monte Carlo methods and numerically generate the probability distribution of different gauge configurations, shown here, and then compute the observable on those, and that's how you non-perturbatively calculate any observable that you want to study using this method. And this method has been very successful. This is a recent review which comes after comes every 2 years to highlight the success of lattice QCD. And among its successes, it has calculated the hadron spectrum very accurately, predicted exotic states, calculated hadron form factors, calculated the values of quark masses and strong coupling constant, decay rates of various processes, and different low energy constants of the effective field theory. And yeah.
So what is it non-perturbative with respect to? Like, what would you even perturb about if you tried to do perturbation?
So if you try to do the perturbation in this Lagrangian, you will have some coupling constant, and you try to do the. So for example, at high energies, that coupling becomes less than order one, and then you can do perturbative calculation. So for example, if you are a large hadron collider, you're colliding two protons, and at that energies, quarks interact with a coupling which is so small, then you can do Feynman diagrammatic calculation. But that cannot be done about low energy objects, which are these confined quarks, which are neutrons and protons. But in this method, you start with quarks, and because you are generating these gauge configurations directly and summing over all measures of the path integral, you are calculating everything together numerically. Yeah, so this method has been successful, but it also has some shortcomings. And the infamous one, which is this sign problem, which says that if you try to calculate the QCD phase diagram and under the finite chemical potential, you lose this probability distribution interpretation of this path integral measure, and you get some oscillating phase. And it takes infinitely long time to capture the physics that you're interested in because this measure is now oscillating. Furthermore, since it is defined in the Euclidean time, real-time evolution of system is hard to do. You need to extract all the quantities and map it to the Euclidean time. And every time this process, for everything, this process becomes more and more tedious to extract the quantities of interest from the Euclidean time calculation. Many body processes are harder to obtain. I've mentioned that it has been used to calculate two and three body scattering amplitudes, but the formalism required to extract these numbers is very tedious, and as the number of particles grow, it's become more and more complicated. So that's why many body processes are tricky to obtain from lattice QCD. Is there an alternative? Yes, see Hamiltonian formulation, in which operators are now calculated in this Heisenberg picture, where you start with the state, evolve it with the Hamiltonian, measure the operator, evolve it back, and take the projection with the starting state. It has no sign problem because there is no probability distribution interpretation. It is just calculating this expectation value. And since we've not performed any Euclidean weak rotation and the time is Minkowski, real-time processes are easy to obtain. Imaginary time can also be done, but I'll not discuss here. It can be done. And since this contains the entire Hamiltonian, this is a Hamiltonian acting on a Hilbert space of interest, you have all possible states in your theory up to some truncation that you want included in your calculation. So you don't have to perform processes by one, like how many particles are there in your process. It's just everything is included. What is the drawback? The Hilbert space scales exponentially with system size, and this is the problem. How can we deal with that? One of the methods is quantum simulation, and this is where I will focus today. So how does quantum simulation save you from this? So I don't have to tell this to the audience, but you know, I made the slides, so bear with me. So in this type of quantum simulation, which is called a digital quantum simulation, you start with qubits, which are the superposition of this 0 and 1 state as represented by on a block sphere. And if you try to, and if you stitch together n such qubits, then now you have an access to 2 to the power n states, which are formed due to the superpositions of these zeros and ones. And then you build a circuit to perform the operations you're interested in doing. You encode your problem you're interested in solving to these qubits, perform those operations, and extract the answer. And that's how the exponential scaling in the number of qubits saves you or can be helpful to solve lattice gauge theories with the Hamiltonian method. So this is a very active area of research, and these are some sample papers which came in about a year, about last year. It's not any representative or exhaustive list. It's just that I wanted to show that people are actively thinking about it. So this is a so in this talk, I'll be focusing on the digital quantum simulation part, and the main aim of this work is eventually solve problems of eventually study scattering on a quantum computer. So what is the schematic protocol of a scattering looks like on a quantum computer? So first, what you do is you take your theory and encode the degrees of freedom that you are interested of your theory onto the qubits. So that's the first state, and you start with a known state in the qubit configuration, let's say a 0101 alternating state. Next, you perform a state preparation algorithm where you now operate on the known state to create the state that you want to start with, which maps to the initial state of your theory. Perform the time evolution operation, and then you reach at a final state of your qubits, and you measure them. Then you get some output, right? So this entire process is called a shot, and this is an example of two shots where each shot will, in this case, gave two different answers. But the idea is you keep performing this on many, many, many shots, collect the result together, and now you get the probability distribution of your states. And once you have the probability once you have the probabilities of your state in your final state, then you can calculate the observable that you're interested in. And in this talk, I'll be focusing on the first part of the circuit, which is the how to prepare the scattering state that we're interested in. Any questions so far?
Sorry, why try and characterize a state instead of like measure the observable you want? Like just in your, like could you just not put O in that circuit?
Yeah, I mean, like I have not included observable in it, but essentially now if I have done the time evolution, I can choose to have the operator coded in this form and then measure the operator here. I'm just trying to show a time evolved state.
Okay.
Yeah, so operator is not included in this picture, but you're right. There will be an additional block of an operator on it. Yeah. So this is just creating psi of t. This is the circuit for that.
Do we know what is the entanglement structure of the scattering states in terms of the qubits? Is it highly entangled?
So it depends on your theory, I guess, right? Like, for example, if you start with something simpler theory which has a perturbative form, then you're starting with something which is in the zero coupling limit, you start with the product state, and if your coupling is small enough, then you are very close to the product state, right? So it depends on what kind of theory you're trying to solve. I guess that's the best answer I could give. Like, if your theory is something which is like the lattice gauge theories, which have a confined phase, then you don't really know what the starting point and the end point is, and there the entanglement structure can be vastly different.
And the degrees of freedom need not be like, you know, two side systems, right? So you're truncating somehow and then encoding, or is it?
Yeah. So it depends on what kind of theory. Like, for example. As I'll show in this work, which we dealt with Z2 lattice gauge theory, we didn't have to truncate because all the degrees of freedom are actually encoded. But let's say if you're trying to do something with a continuous group like U1 theory, then you have infinite Hilbert space, and then you need to have a truncation.
So in that case, it could happen that the entanglement structure after truncation
can be different.
Yeah.
So it's the truncation effects are usually the UV effects, right? Like, so it's always my theory is contained within the Hilbert space that I'm interested in. For example, like, it's the same reason that when I'm trying to do an experiment on electrons in my lab, I don't have to care about like TeV scale photons. It's something like that. So I guess that's the best I could answer to the entanglement question. All right, any more questions? Okay, so in the pioneering work by Jordan Lee and Preskill here, they proposed a method of preparing a state for studying scattering. And the method involved preparing the non-interacting ground state, shown here by omega 0. And then because it is non-interacting, one can solve exactly for the single particle single particle states with a momentum k. And these creation operators, once you know the form, you can stitch together with the wave function that you want to create, this psi of k, operate it on the non-interacting ground state, and then you get a wave packet in the non-interacting theory. So that would be the starting point of the, so you do this process, you are now still in the non-interacting, but now you have a wave packet. And the next is to perform this adiabatic evolution and take the theory from the non-interacting theory to the interacting theory by changing the Hamiltonian slowly, and hope that the non-interacting wave packet eventually deforms to the interacting wave packet that you want to study in the interacting theory. But there are some problems with this method. First of all, it's very expensive, particularly for the NISQ-ERA devices, because you need to do all of this. You need to first prepare the non-interacting ground state, operate it, and evolve it. It might not be also possible for every physics that you're interested in studying, because particularly for situations like if there is a phase transition in your evolution, then this adiabatic process fails. And for this problem that we are studying, which is the lattice gauge theories, which exhibit this phenomenon of confinement, then the interacting degrees of freedom are different than your starting degrees of freedom. So you don't even know how to prepare and how to, it's non-trivial to do this and end up in a state that you want to, that you're interested in. Yeah.
Can you explain why do we have like different degrees of freedoms? Like for
For example, like QCD is described with quarks, right? But when I'm dealing with a nuclear physics at this energies, I don't see quarks. I see neutrons and protons, which are these bound states of quarks, and quarks are only become sort of these free objects at the very high energies. So that's why the interacting degrees of freedom at this stage are neutrons and protons and pions, but not the quarks. So that's why interacting degrees of freedom are different than the degrees of freedom that I'm using to describe the theory, which is the quarks and gluons. Okay.
I guess in other words, if you had created a quark in the non-interacting theory over there, say I have a particle, how can you get your proton state out of that, right? you create three quarks, still there is no guarantee that you get your proton out of that, because there are a bunch of muons and so on.
Yes.
So kind of to have a best guess of where to start in the free theory to get your interacting protons.
Yes, yes, yes. Like how to put them together.
Right. Which is what Sorab is going to kind of address.
So, this is a good time to say that, okay, first of all, this is a different methods that, of state preparation. Again, not an exhaustive list, just to show a snapshot of literature that people are working on this problem. It's a very active area of research. And our approach, that brings to our approach, which is we are going to do a parallel process to this left side, which is instead of starting with the non-interacting ground state, we'll start with the interacting ground state, and we'll try to find an ansatz for these momentum creation single particle momentum creation operators directly in the interacting theory instead of a non-interacting theory, and this ansatz for the BK dagger that we have used is heavily influenced by this work by Rigabello, Notarnicola, Magnifico, and Montangelo, where they used such similar ansatz for calculating scattering in the Schwinger model, which is a U1 lattice gauge theory on tensor networks. So, as I said, start with the interacting ground state, use this ansatz to build the interacting creation operators, stitch it to the wave function that you're interested in studying, and create this wave function wave packet creation operator BSI dagger, act it on the interacting ground state, and prepare an interacting wave packet. So this is our approach, and I'll show how can we do this. Are there any questions? Excellent. All right, so this is the outline of my talk. First, I'll talk about the model, which we've used Z2 and U1 lattice gauge theory in 1 plus 1D coupled with dynamical matter. Method, how to construct these creation operators. Mapping, how to circuitize this process, and what is the quantum algorithm for it. Measurement, these are the hardware results from the Continuum's H11 system. And finally, moreover, what are the conclusions and what is the outlook for it? Okay, so the model. What we have worked on is the Z2 lattice gauge theory in 1 plus 1D with dynamical matter, and why this particular theory, because it's a confined theory. So you, the physics is something which you are interested in. And furthermore, the Zn theories with n tend to infinity, you approach to the U1 lattice gauge theory, which is the Schwinger model, is the abelian theory. So that's the motivation. And the starting point of it is the time is taken continuous, but the space has been discretized. So this is the discretized space. And now you have the fermionic degrees of freedom, which are the matter degrees of freedom. But when we're trying to put fermionic degrees of freedom on a discretized lattice, they don't have the correct correct dispersion relations in the continuum limit. So you need to change something in order to make sense of those fermions on a discretized lattice. And in this work, we use the staggered fermion formalism, where each physical lattice site is split into two staggered lattice sites. And now the matter and the antimatter part of this fermionic field is put into two different staggered sites. So at even size, there is a matter degree of freedom. At odd size, there's an antimatter degree of freedom. And because of this, it acquires a Dirac-C interpretation, which means that at matter sites, a particle excitation corresponds to an occupied site corresponds to a particle excitation. An unoccupied site corresponds to no particle. However, for the antimatter site, it's the other way around. An occupied site corresponds to no particle excitation, while an unoccupied site corresponds to an antiparticle excitation. So this is the staggering formalism. And because of this staggering, the fermionic mass acquires this oscillating sign, which depends on the fermion number density at that state, at that site. The fermion mass is denoted by MF. So next degree of freedom is the bosonic degree of freedom. And this bosonic degree of freedom lives on the link connecting two staggered sites. And since this is Z2 theory, it's a spin half object which has two states up and down and has a corresponding energy, which is the electric field energy. And in the couplings that we have chosen, the up state corresponds to an excited state with respect to this energy, and down state corresponds to a low energy state with respect to this Hamiltonian. So finally, we have an interacting term which couples the fermions and boson degrees of freedom, where now you have this hopping like term which takes fermion from one side to other side, but at the same time changes the gauge degree of freedom in between. So this is our Hamiltonian, the Z2 lattice gauge theory Hamiltonian with three terms. And as you can see from the picture, you might think, okay, for a staggered side, I have 2 degrees of freedom corresponding to both particle and the antiparticle side. And also at the link degrees of, at the link, I have 2 states. So are all 2 to the power 2 n states physical states? The answer is no, because since it's a gauge theory, you need to make sure that your states are respecting the gauge symmetry. And that means only the state which satisfy a certain constraint are the physical state. And those constraints are called Gauss's law constraint, which ensure that a state is a gauge invariant state. So in this case, the Gauss's law constraints are given by this condition where an operator is an identity operator on the physical states. And those are the only states out of these 2 to the power 2 n states which are relevant. And the Gauss law operator is given here in this formula. But what does it mean is that every time you have a particle or an antiparticle excitation, the gauge degree of freedom across that site should flip from one link to other. So if I have particle excitation, which is 1, 1, the gauge degree of freedom flips from down to up or up to down. And similarly for the antiparticle excitation. So these are the states which are physical states, and all other states are redundant, irrelevant states.
So there are also bosons?
These arrows are, you can think of it as a two-state boson. Like it's a Z2 gauge theory.
Okay, this
yeah.
is fermion.
So this one is fermion, yes?
So you're writing all the allowed physical attributes things?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So these 4 things are the things allowed in this?
So these 4 are example of 4 sites which are valid physical sites. So if I have some n sites, then I can stitch together. In other words, look, I'll show you here. So now I'm trying to connect that picture that I showed earlier for larger system of how does a gauge invariant state looks like in multiple qubits. But yeah, so okay, maybe we can discuss this one. So this is the Hamiltonian, and because of the gauge invariance, we are only allowed to have a certain type of excitation. So for example, in this case, addressing your question, let's start with a state which we call which is referred to as the strong coupling vacuum. This is the lowest energy state corresponding to the Hamiltonian terms which are diagonal. So if you assume that the interacting term is negligible compared to these 2 terms, that is the electric energy and the mass is very high, then this is the lowest energy state, which means no particle or antiparticle excitation, and all the gauge degrees of freedom are in the lowest state. Now, what do I mean by a physical state? And what the earlier picture refers to is that the only physical excitations are the one which satisfy that every time there is an excitation, either particle or antiparticle, the gauge degree of freedom must flip. So in this case, as you can see, there is a particle excitation at the first site and an antiparticle excitation at the last site. And this is a physical state because the gauge degree of freedom flipped from the lowest to highest here, but then stayed the same because there is no particle or antiparticle excitation, and it ended here and flipped again. So this is what I mean by the earlier picture. Okay. So these are the only physical, these type of excitations are the only physical states, and that's how you build your physical Hilbert space. And we refer to this as a meson state, or this is a length 3 meson, which starts at a particle and ends at an antiparticle. And for our work, we we're working with a lattice which satisfies the periodic boundary condition, and it's a charge zero sector, meaning the number of particles and the number of antiparticles we have taken to be equal. And the reason we did that is because that's the sector which gets mapped in to the U1 Schwinger model in the periodic boundary condition. Yeah.
Charge zero sector, meaning just like even number of excitations.
Let me think if it is even number. Yes, the number of fermions and the number of antifermions has to be equal.
Okay.
Yeah. And as a result, because of this Gauss law constraint, this table shows how small is the physical space compared to the entire Hilbert space. For example, four lattice sites, there are 256 possible states, but only 12 are physical. And for six lattice sites, there are 4,096 states which are possible, but only 40 are physical. And this number for the six site, it's irrelevant for this talk because we worked with the six site theory to put it on the hardware. Okay, so these are six staggered sites. All right, any questions so far? Excellent. All right, so moving on to the method of how to build these creation operators in the interacting theory. So as I said, we have an ansatz for this BK dagger borrowed from this work. And now I'll explain the ansatz. So this is the form of the ansatz and which builds the momentum creation operator for mesonic excitations. And let's look at each term one by one. So this B term has two components, one which is create a particle, but it has a string of boson links attached to it going to the right. Similarly, the other counterpart, which is create an antiparticle, but have also a same string attached to it, which goes to the right. And put together, these two strings towards the right cancel out, and now you have a meson degree of freedom. So this BPQ dagger creates a particle antiparticle excitation, which has some functions outside which are derived using solving the free fermion theory exactly. And what does it do is that it creates a particle antiparticle excitation with momentum P and Q like that. So this is an object which creates a particle and an antiparticle with momentum P and Q. But what we want is a meson, which is this composite object of these two, to move with a certain momentum. And that's why the delta function here takes care of that. So even if there are two independent particles going with the momentum P and Q, the delta function makes sure that the composite object is moving with the momentum K. And the final part of this ansatz is this ansatz function eta, which is this overlap dressing function, which makes sure that if the particle and the antiparticle P and Q are far away from each other, then so this is a Gaussian ansatz for how these particle and antiparticle states should be dressed in a composite object. And what does it do is that if the P and Q are far away from each other into this adding K, then it suppresses its contribution. So this is the form of the ansatz. And as shown here, for example, K equal to 0. So at K equal to 0, since P 0 and Q equal to 0 add up to K equal to 0, and these are the closest to each other, it has the highest contribution, and everything else is exponentially suppressed. So this ansatz has two parameters. One is where is it centered around in the momentum space of these P and Q, and what is the width of that Gaussian? And what we do is we optimize these two parameters, mu and sigma, for each K sector by looking at the creation operator with respect to those two parameters on interacting ground state and minimizing its energy. So this corresponds to the first excited state in the K sector created using our answer. So any question about this? Yeah.
Can you explain again, like, the choice for BQ and BPQ? Like, what was the idea? Like, what was the goal? Like,
can you elaborate on the question? So,
delta P, so the delta, the red part, is like that they should move together, I guess, in a lattice?
Yes, so they should, their momenta should add up so that your meson moves in the with the momentum that you're interested in, which is this k momentum.
Yeah, so they kind of like move together, I guess.
Yes, yeah.
What was the purple, the goal of the purple box?
So the purple box creates those objects. So these are like, it creates those independent objects with momentum p and q. So this is where you have the creation operators for those two independent components. So think of it as your meson, and this is one composite particle, one of the particles, and the other, this is the other antiparticle. So this one has a momentum p, this one has a momentum q, but together they add up to give the momentum k. And BPQ dagger creates these objects, a bunch of these objects, which correct momentum overlap functions. Does that make it clear?
So maybe on a high level, like what is the goal of the
design? It's a string of quark and anti-quark, right? So you can have quark and anti-quark that are sitting next to each other. You can have quark and anti-quark that are separated by one link. You can have quark and anti-quarks that are separated far apart. And then you're summing all those contributions. And then you give it a momentum distribution, a wave packet, for each of those quark and anti-quarks to move with certain momentum. Right, so that object B that Saurabh showed are those strings of quark and anti-quarks with the links between them so that you have gauge invariant constituents.
Yeah.
So the operator aspect is in B. These are in terms of size and psi bars and the U's. The rest are just some ansatz for how in momentum space these objects are distributed.
I see. Yeah.
So think of it as a pion, which is made up of this QQ bar pair. And it has all sorts of different extensions of this QQ bar. But they have a contribution, which is like how much they are contributing to the overall pion state. So think of it like that. So BQ dagger creates this different length of QQ bars. And this eta makes sure that how much they are contributing to the final composite object.
I see.
Yeah. And the eta has two parameters because it's a Gaussian ansatz. How is it centered in this momentum space? And what is the width of this Gaussian?
Maybe another intuition for why this ansatz is that you want these objects to be bound. So if P and Q are very different in this one-dimensional lattice, then they're going to at some point move far apart from each other. So they have to have a momentum difference that is small enough so that they can move together as a boundless state.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of the intuition behind this ansatz that Montevero et al. Introduced. What they didn't do is to optimize it. They kind of guessed some parameters that worked well. But what we're doing here is some sort of VQE to make sure that this is the best ansatz.
And which parameters do you optimize?
So these are the mu and the sigma, which is where is the ansatz centered in the momentum space, and what is the width of these different momentum differences.
What you would expect, like a nature kind of thing.
So as Zora mentioned, so what we are doing is we are optimizing these two parameters to get the lowest energy state in the each k sector. So we did this calculation classically, but we checked that the VQE method works. We just were limited by the computational resources. That's why we didn't do this VQE process on an actual device. We also checked for, it works for the U1 lattice gauge theory. I'll show the results later, but I just wanted to highlight that this also works for the U1, even though I described everything for Z2. Yeah.
So kind of like you're like building kind of composite particles.
Yeah, yeah. And the basic idea is, whatever is the composite particle, it has to be made up of all gauge invariant operators that you can think of in your theory. And in this case, in 1+1 dimension, the only two types of gauge invariant operators you can construct are these QQ bar pair, and also, since it's a periodic boundary condition, a gauge link going all around. But I'll talk about what happens to the gauge link going all around later. Yeah, so this is the complete picture of how I'm preparing a wave packet. As I mentioned earlier, each k sector has its own BK dagger with mu and sigma, which are optimized. So these all red parameters are optimized for each k momentum state. And then I can dress them all with whatever desired wave function in the momentum space that I want to study. So this is the input, the green wave function, which is also we have taken to be Gaussian, but you can choose it anything that you want. It depends on the problem that you want to study. It is just the dressing in the momentum space, and the everything else is the optimized wave function for each momentum k. So this is the overall picture of how we are building the final wave packet creation operator. It has two dressings, one in the momentum space wave function, and the second which is optimized to get each momentum eigenstate, okay? All right, so let's look at the mapping of how to actually realize this on a quantum computer. So this is the algorithm at the circuit for that Bessel Dagger operators, and I've laid out in the four steps. The first one is map the fermionic and the bosonic degrees of freedom to qubits, and this is done, as you recall, this is the picture where you have staggered site and the fermionic degrees of freedom, and the link, there is a gauge degree of freedom. For the gauge degree of freedom, it's obvious you just map it to qubits because it's a two-state system. For the fermionic degree of freedom, one can perform the Jordan, one has to perform the Jordan-Wigner transformation to make sure that the anti-commutation relation between the fermion is satisfied. So you do the Jordan-Wigner transformation where psi dagger is mapped to a lowering operator and a psi operator is mapped to a raising operator in the spin space. And there is a string of these sigma z's which are to the left of them. All right. So the form of our ansatz when written in terms of these psi daggers and psi by decomposing each object in it, we arrive at this part. And after performing the Jordan-Wigner by substituting these psi daggers and psi, now we have the B psi dagger in terms of this just qubit raising and lowering operators and sigma x's and sigma z's on qubits. The sigma z's are coming from the Jordan-Wigner transformation. These sigma x operators are coming from this mapping of the boson degree of freedom as it is. And all the coefficients which are resulting from each of these steps, including the optimization optimized parameters in this eta and the input parameters in this outer wave function you want to study, they are all now clubbed together in these coefficients CMNs, which M and N are different lattice sites. So you can think of this Bessel dagger finally in the qubit space as an object which connects two different qubits at M and N with some number CMN, which has both input and the optimization, and a string of Z's and X's in between, where the string of Z's is on the fermionic qubit and string of X's are on the bosonic qubit. So this is how you create. So it has, it's a mixture of object, it's a mixture of operators with varying length. You have all possible lengths combined together, okay? So that's the form. And we have worked with six staggered sites, which has three, which means three physical sites, has three physical momenta as shown here, and requires 12 qubits to encode these degrees of freedom, which means 4096 states, but only 40 are physical. Okay, so that's the setup. The second step is to create the non-interacting ground state. This is not the focus of our work. This is, so we'll only show it, discuss it briefly and show you the results. So we prepare the non-interacting ground state using a method inspired from this work by Lumia, Torta, Geng, and et al. So in this work, they suggested a method of constructing the non-interacting ground state by looking at the Hamiltonian terms and associating a parameter with each term and then just optimizing that parameter. So in that notion, we have two types of terms here for our theory. One are the non-diagonal terms of these hoppings, which come with a parameter theta h, and the diagonal terms, which combine, which we have taken only the electric term because the you can only choose to have one of them. So this electric term comes with the parameter theta epsilon, and there are only two parameters, and this is the circuit which acts on a strong coupling vacuum state, which maps to our qubits directly as an alternating 0, 1, 0, 1 between fermionic qubits and all zeros of the bosonic qubits. So known state, a circuit which has two parameters, optimize the parameters to find the lowest energy state, that's perform a VQE algorithm on it, and that's the ground state of the non-interacting theory. So this is the result. So this is the so in this plot, the crosses are the exactly solved theory for different physical states, which are there are 40, and the y-axis is their corresponding probability. The crosses as I said, is exactly diagonalized, and the diamonds are the results of this optimization using these answers. So they agree pretty well. Their energies are also in agreement, and the overlap between the exact state and the optimized states is almost one. So to conclude, we have a very good non-interacting ground state to begin with so that our BSI dagger can operate on it, okay? Next, how to, these are the results. So the next step is, how well is this ANSARS doing in terms of capturing these momentum eigenstates? So as we discussed earlier, so there are two parameters which are optimizing for each K sector. And in this case, there are three momenta because it's a six staggered sites case. So this is the result. Again, the crosses are the exactly solved momentum eigenstates, the first excited states, and the circles, green circles, are the results from this optimization of this ANSARS. And as you can see, they agree pretty well, both for k equal to 0 and k equal to pi by 3, or plus minus pi by 3. Yeah?
And how large is this lattice size here?
It's six staggered sites, so three physical sites. So there are like 12 qubits, yeah.
Can you make, because I'm like, I remember like exact diagonalization like breaks down very quickly.
Yeah, so on our computers, we can easily go to 14 qubits, 16 qubits, on a bigger machines probably, but not more than, I would not say like 22 qubits is like the limit probably. Okay. And if you use a big machine, like a cluster or something, maybe a higher, but that's what we are talking about. It's not definitely.
Software tensile, 20 qubits in the computer.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, you could do a few more qubits.
So
yeah.
How many like fermions does this refer to?
10 fermions and then 20 qubits. Because for each fermion, there is one other spin association.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So this is the result. As you can see, the energies are very well in agreement. For optimize and the exact result. And the overlap is also close to one, within 1%, 2%. This is the result of how well the ANSARS is working for different parameters in your theory. So x-axis is the epsilon, which is the coupling constant for the electric field, and y-axis is the fermion mass. And what is this plot showing is that for different parameters, how well is the overlap where we are. Where the darker the color, the better is the ANSARS working, and the lighter the color is performing worse. But even for the yellow colors, it's about it's in agreement of about 90% to 92%. Is there any questions? Yeah.
Sorry. Did you optimize the ANSARS like with another EQE, or did you do it classically?
So this optimization we did classically for the final result, but we checked the VQE works.
Okay.
So we checked it on our computers that if you circuitize it and perform the VQE, it works. It's just that we didn't do it on an actual device because the resources are expensive. Yeah. So this is the result for six staggered sites as well as Zora mentioned, 10 staggered sites that we did that we also optimized for our work. It works pretty well in almost everywhere and. Even in the continuum limit, you have about 90% to 92% overlap with the excited states that you are interested in. Now, here comes the point that I mentioned earlier. What happens to this gauge degrees of freedom going around the lattice? This is where this cyan line is indicated. What happens to the left of this cyan line is the lowest energy state is not the mesonic state that we just saw with a particle and antiparticle, but a gauge link going around excited around the lattice. So this is something like a gauge loop. And the reason that we don't have to worry about this is because in the 1 plus 1 dimension, the energy of that object increases with length. Because the longer I make my lattice, the larger it gets, the larger is the string, and higher is the energy. So this is something which is an effect of a small lattice size. And then you can make the lattice sufficiently large so that you can come back to this side of the line, which means that your first excited state is still this meson-like state. Similar result for the U1 lattice gauge theory. Again, same ANSARS work pretty well. You also have the same line left to which you have excited gauge degree of freedom going around. And as you can see, even for the U1 theory, with some truncation, this works very well. So this is the truncation one result, and it works very well. Okay. So any question on the optimization? All right. So the final step is how to realize this, how to prepare a circuit for this wave packet creation operator. We discussed the form of it. There are two issues with it. One is it is non-unitary, because just by looking at the form, it is clear that it is non-unitary. And the second is because it has extended operators in your entire lattice, you need to have a circuit which is efficient in realizing it. So let's deal with the first one, which is what to do if it is a non-unitary operator. We use the method given by Jordan Lee and Preskill in this work, where you use an ancilla to extend the Hilbert space, and then using that extended Hilbert space, one can realize these non-unitary operators. This method, which works if the operator satisfies these two conditions, which are the conditions satisfied by single particle creation operators, which is it should annihilate the vacuum, and it should be normalized to one. The computation of it with its Hermitian conjugate should be one. And since we have our ansatz creation operators directly in the non-interacting theory, these two are satisfied as long as our outer wave function is normalized, which is true. And if this is true, then one can construct a operator, a Hermitian operator theta, and make this unitary gate e to the power I pi by 2 theta, act it on the non-interacting ground state and an ancilla qubit in the zero state to get the desired B psi dagger operator on the non-interacting state while the ancilla goes to 1, right? And we can just disregard this ancilla, and now we have operated the B psi dagger on the vacuum that we're interested in. So this is the method. And if there are many terms in this theta, one can still perform this by trotterizing this angle theta by 2, and then still performing the trotterized circuit. All right. The next is it needs an efficient circuit for realizing this extended objects. And we use the method of singular value decomposition given by Zora, Alex, and Jesse in this work. And in this way, what one can do is, if you want to realize these theta operators, and if they satisfy these two conditions, which is their squares are 0, and you can find a singular value decomposition where V and W's are unitary, then one can again construct this operator curly U, which diagonalizes the operator that you're interested in implementing and becomes a simplified form. And since our meson strings have fermions at the ends, this is automatically satisfied, because you have two fermion and an antifermion at the end. So if you operate it twice, it has to give you 0. So since these two conditions are met for the ansatz, one can use the singular value decomposition, and we have this. Okay. So as an example, this is how a circuit looks like for a one-length meson creation operator, B psi dagger, with some coefficient. This is the meson string. It has no Jordan-Wigner because it's one length, so there are no Jordan-Wigner Zs and some phase. This is the singular value decomposition part in the yellow on left and right. And in between is this diagonal operator, which is coming from exponentiation trick of ancilla. So this is how an example of how you realize a meson object in on a quantum computer. Any questions? So this is the final part, which is the measurement, how the hardware how does it look like on a hardware. So this is a plot where, again, x-axis is the physical states labeled, and y-axis is the probability. But now these are all calculations performed exactly on a computer. And as you can see, the circuit, when implemented using Qiskit, agrees very well with the exact optimized result done by diagonalizing the Hamiltonian. And there are some discrepancies here, if you notice. And these are the discrepancies because this is the systematic error that comes because it's our BK daggers are approximated with an ansatz. They are not exactly the creation operators in the theory. So these two conditions, which are required for the ancilla method to work, are violated a little bit. And this violation is seen as a systematic error in these results. Okay, so as you can see, the method works very well. The overlap, which we could compute because we did the exact state vector calculation and many, many, many Trotter steps, the overlap between these two results is almost 1, and only 3.8% of the state remained in the 0 ancilla, which corresponds to the violation coming from violating these two conditions. So it's a pretty, it works pretty well. However, realizing this entire circuit on a quantum computer is expensive, so we worked with a truncated quantum circuit, and since the ansas is the operators are constructed with coefficients which can be systematically arranged according to their magnitude, one can then decide to implement only the terms which are important. And we decided to implement the terms which has coefficient greater than 0.1 perform this analysis with second order Trotter formula in only 1 Trotter step. And you can see even at this scale, where we have significantly reduced the number of operators we need to implement, yet the overlap is again about 95%. And it agrees very well also with the ideal circuit and the exact optimized result. So this is a pretty good starting point. So next step, we implemented this truncated quantum circuit on a quantinium H11 system. So the quantinium H11 is a trapped ion system with a 20 qubit. It has all-to-all connectivity, extremely high fidelity of the single qubit gates, and significantly high fidelity for the 2 qubit entangling gates. So on this system, we realizing this entire circuit, including the ground state preparation and the wave packet operator, required about 300 C0 gates and about 350 single qubit gates. We could afford to put 500 shots on the system, and we came up with that number because after performing a lot of analysis of different noises, we realized that 500 is sufficient to realize this truncated quantum circuit on the device. And this is the result as shown here with the cyan triangles. So there is no fidelity overlap calculation because we only have probabilities and not the final state. And the errors were obtained using some bootstrap method of resampling and calculating the error saturation. A notice, a very important fact here is that it didn't require any advanced error mitigation techniques because our entire construction is made up of gauge invariant operators. So we used a very simple noise mitigation techniques that if we find a state in the final state which is violating the Gauss's law, which is unphysical, we just throw that shot out because it clearly indicates that there is some noise error. The entire method protects the gauge symmetry, so whatever is outside of it is from the device noise. And just by using this simple method, we could get this good agreement. And about from the quantinium device, about 20% of these 500 shots were thrown out of the gauge invariant space because of the device noise. And coming to the final part, so this is again the same wave packet, but now looked at the observable, which is this fermion density operator. How excited is a fermion at each site? And as you can see, it has a clear wave packet structure for 6 staggered site. Furthermore, we realized another, we implemented another wave packet with a different width, this time a narrower width in the momentum space. Again, the results agree very well. And the now you can see that the staggered density profile is has flattened in the position space because the wave packet is narrower in the momentum space. So everything works very well. We also checked, not on the device, but again, using classical calculations, that you have the ability to move around the wave packet, you have ability to, again, spread the wave packet, and it works very well. Any questions regarding the device results? Yeah.
So what is the interpretation then, like, that you observe, like, some fermion density?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
What is the interpretation or, like, okay, that you observe some fermion density? Is it like just that you created like kind of like, you know?
I mean, these are all indicate how, like, so since you're preparing a wave packet, you're looking also at the, you operated on a starting state which had some fermions, but now your wave packet is kind of exciting according to the profile that you want to create. The profile control is in the momentum space, but that is reflected also in how the fermions are distributed in the position space, right? So I created some wave packet in the momentum space, and the Fourier transform version of it would be this profile in the momentum space.
So I'm confused because I felt like we're aiming to prepare a ground state in the interacting theory for the interacting theory.
Yeah, that was the previous part, which was
so that was this,
and on these interacting ground state, we operated these BK daggers, which are the excited state, the first excited state.
So okay, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so these are the two wave packets that we put on the device. Summary and outlook. So this is the method summarized. We use the parallel approach as in the non-interacting theory. That is, have the ansatz for the BK dagger, act it on the non-interacting ground state. These are the four steps which I explained. And this is the hardware result from the Quantinuum H11 system. To highlight again, it is a completely gauge invariant construction. It is a VQE based method. The systematic error has been identified, and it works also for the U1 lattice gauge theory as demonstrated earlier with the parameter scan, and can be implemented in the NISC on the NISC devices clearly. Outlook, so what's more? It's good to measure more observable for measuring the wave packet fidelity. We only check the local observable, which is this staggered number density, but it's also interesting to look at the non-local observables. Having some analytical bounds on the systematic error, but how much violation can we tolerate to get whatever systematic error that we're interested in would be nice. And if you want to put this on devices like IBM, which has more device noise compared to the Quantinuum system, one might require some advanced noise mitigation techniques, and this is something which needs to be think about. What's next? Prepare two wave packets and perform a scattering experiment. Try to extract some interesting physics from the scattering. Try to realize the same the wave packet of the in the U1 lattice gauge theory on larger devices. Recently, members from my group at IQIS at University of Washington have created a non-interacting ground state on 100 plus qubits for a U1 lattice gauge theory. So clearly, it's possible to go on larger systems, and now it would be interesting to see how this method works on these non-interacting ground states and to prepare a new packet. Finally,
Not just the interacting.
Yeah, yeah. So wave packet, I already quoted that paper earlier. It's a they've also prepared a wave packet, but it would be cool to see this method work on. So just to mention that this method has no gauge degrees of freedom. They have been integrated out with an open boundary condition. So it would be nice to see if you keep the gauge degree of freedom explicitly in that, how does this method of preparing state, which has more control, will work. Finally, can we build a similar ansatz for the non-abelian gauge theories, and how well would it work? And particularly, some formulations of non-abelian gauge theory, different formulations of the non-abelian gauge theory, like the loop string hadron formulation. I should have put a reference here, but I forgot. In these formulations, it looks more intuitive to have this ansatz constructed instead of the traditional sense of designing the non-abelian lattice gauge theory. So with that, thank you very much for your attention. And this is our group at IQIS, where we focus on using the quantum information sciences for many body system, quantum field theories, and nuclear physics. Thank you very much. Questions? Yeah.
Very nice talk. I was wondering if you had an estimate for how the error scales with the number of particles.
With the number of particles?
With the number of fermions.
With the number of fermions. So as I said, we restricted ourselves to a particular symmetry sector, which is a given sector of the fermions. We didn't check it outside of the different charge sector because in the ultimate theory that we're interested in, which is the U1 lattice gauge theory, a periodic boundary condition necessarily fixes which fermion number sector that you are working in. Because in order for the gauge field to come back at the last link, you can only excite it and then de-excite it with the equal number of fermions and antifermions. So you are restricted to that sector just by the periodic boundary condition. So that's why if you're asking the question of like, how does it perform with different fermion number sectors, then we didn't do that because again, in the U1, there's only one sector in the periodic boundary condition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, like, do you have an idea a bit of like the entanglement of the state you're creating after? Because like the B operators look highly non-local, so I'm wondering, like, are you creating like these highly entangled?
That's an interesting question. We didn't look at the entanglement structure, but I think I should put it on the what's next part of how is the entanglement structure looks like.
And so the paper that you referenced, the tensor network paper,
yeah,
on larger system space packets, and they've also done the scattering with them, they have looked at this. So
yeah,
they have defined something that is called internal sort of big packet entanglement. They subtract out the entanglement from the interacting vacuum. And then sort of they ask the question of, like, if I have this internal entanglement of the big packets, what would happen to them after they're scattering?
Yeah.
So you should check out that paper. That's very interesting. Entanglement discussions in that paper. But we didn't do that here because we have a small system sizes and our effort was concentrated on how to build these circuits and optimize them and not necessarily doing any phenomenology with it yet.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't really fit anything on the hardware to think about a scattering and so on. So
yeah. So yeah, as Zora was saying, this is the work. And they used entanglement as a measure of scattering. So, and they could easily do it because they have tensor networks and it's easy to compute entanglement in tensor network. But for us, it's a very difficult problem in itself. We can do it classically, of course, but then it's small system sizes. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was just wondering, because, like, you know, the tensor network, they probably have to, well, to, like, truncate their singular values, right? If they're using, I'm guessing, like, an MPS or something. For
yeah, yeah. So they'll just chop it and then measure the, yeah.
But like, you don't have to do that. So I was just wondering if, like, even on a small system, if it's for a small system heavily entangled, because then when you scale it up, it's sort of...
So we haven't looked at it, but that's something clearly which, yeah. Thank you for the feedback. It's like, yeah, that's something which is easy, can be easily done and can be looked at. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was wondering how long does a calculation take for, let's say, the truncated circuit?
So you mean how long on a classical optimization or on a device?
Maybe I misunderstood. I thought that the optimization was all classical.
Yeah, optimization is classical. So are you asking, like, how long does it take for those to optimize?
Yes.
So for our 10 system size on your laptop, it's like 3 minutes, 2 minutes.
Okay.
For the larger, I think the largest we've checked using bigger computers, the biggest we could manage to get our hands on is 14 sites, and that took about like half an hour. But I believe if you go to a cluster, it would be much faster, and you can probably go at higher lattices. But yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What about like a 2D system? Like
something to be considered, but yeah, it's very so.
Like obvious, right? Like
yeah, yeah. So the natural. Extension of this answers on the 2D system is, again, you construct every gauge invariant operator you can think of, which is relevant for the state that you are creating, and then come up with some kind of ansatz which has some parameters which will make sure, like, how each of these operators is contributing. That will require some non-trivial task. We are thinking about it. That's something on the list. Sure.
Can you explain again, like the BQE circuit for the optimization, right, of like your parameters, like how is the splitting up exactly taken? Like, how many so gauge degrees, and then like
so
in terms, or like you had like this, I think it was a green and an orange layer, right? Like
for the ground state or for,
yes,
the,
for the
K sector state?
Oh,
because you can do BQE for both.
Yeah. So if you're referring to this circuit,
yeah, this one, exactly.
This is the ground state preparation. This one block is the hopping block, and this other block is the electric energy block, and each of them have their parameter. So you start with the strong coupling vacuum, implement both these, measure the state, measure its energy, and try to see the put it in the classical optimizer. So
the reason why, okay, so like this choice, like just to make it all like a package that makes commuting observables, right? Like as like kind of like the first.
So this one, you mean?
Yeah, so this one, but.
I don't think I'm getting your question exactly.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, do you have some idea why, like.
Why?
Why this way, like, Well, for example, like you share the same you share the same parameter for hopping terms and then like for
So all hoppings are with the same parameter and all electric fields are with the same parameter. So we only have two different ones. Yeah.
You don't know why, it just works.
Yeah.
So you start with the minimal set of parameters you can put in, and if it works, then you can explore anything else. So it was the first guess and it worked. So
yeah, it is also like a natural guess, right?
It's like trautorization.
Yeah.
With some free parameters, not time, right?
Do you just run the two steps or do you repeat the...
So in principle, in their work, they have repeated it with each layer being a different set of parameters. In our case, it just like, because this is, I guess it's a simpler theory of Z2 lattice gauge theory,
a small system.
Yeah. In just one step, it worked. Yeah.
It's also like in the paper, like where you say, okay, you're not performing like some adiabatic change from, but you do exactly like kind of like the digital optimization.
Yeah. So it's more like a hybrid classical quantum algorithm.
Yeah.
Any questions online? I don't know if people are still there. Okay.
Let's take other questions so much, I guess, and speak again.